We're at budget again. It's that time of year to start for the 2019-2020 biennial budget. And this is, I guess, our first formal discussion on this. And the main purpose today is to talk about assumptions and building the framework for the budget. Probably the key there is the assumptions regarding the economy and income estimates, but also what we piece in the spending part of the budget. So on and on, she's going to go over, I believe, you know, process also, and then we'll get to assumptions, and we might even talk a little bit about strategy. So given that the outlook in terms of income versus spending for the general fund is not good. There's a gap there. We're still putting that together. We don't have numbers today on that, but there is a shortfall for the next. So, Adriana?
Hey.
Thank you. Good morning, councilors. Adriana Prada with the Budget Office. And as Jim said, this is our kickoff work session for preparing the 2019-20 budget. As stated here, the goal of the work session is for the county manager to propose a framework to build the 2019-20 budget and receive your guidance regarding the process to be used, the assumptions, and the policy priorities. So this is really a very process-oriented, assumption, philosophically-oriented work session. We won't be dazzling you with a lot of data today, but we promise we will come back and dazzle with data at the end of March in the next work session. The agenda for today, I'd like to go through just a review of what the biennial budget process looks like, what it's looked like traditionally, and what the proposal is. Talk about some of the challenges that are facing the budget for 1920, and then go into the actual revenue and expense assumptions that will be used to build the budget that the county manager is proposing and seeking guidance about. And then there's room for discussion and guidance and feedback. So the first part is going through what the biennial budget development process looks like. Clark County adopts two-year budgets, and there is a required mid-biennium review, which we call informally the re-adopt, that we've just gone through in December 2017. We're currently in the 2017-18 budget cycle, and we spend the whole year in 2018 preparing the next two-year budget cycle for 2019-20. That biennium will begin January 1 of 2019, and it'll end December 31st, 2020. And biennial budgeting is really an option given to local governments in the state of Washington. It really decreases the workload and encourages long-term planning. Roles and responsibilities of the core parties involved in the budget process. The council is the legislative authority, and the council implements policy by allocating funding to departments and offices. So in that sense, the budget is a policy map. The county manager recommends a balanced budget that follows county policy direction and is obviously within available resources. And then the role of the budget office is to really just facilitate the process by which the county manager develops the recommended budget as prescribed by the county charter. Also, the county manager relies on the finance team for some advisory input. He leads the finance team. He's the chair of the finance team. And the finance team includes the budget director, human resources director, and representatives of the auditor and treasurer office. Their role is really advisory regarding finance, budget, cash, and debt management implications of the budget proposals. Some of the budget process values that we've been relying on are communication, an open and inclusive process, objectiveness, a data-driven decision-making process, accuracy, honesty, and clear expectations are some of the core values in the process. And when we get to discuss the strategy part, we can talk about the process improvements that will be proposed in order to operationalize these values. But we've put a lot of focus in the last couple of years on an increased level of communication with departments and offices throughout the budget process, submitting budget requests that are data-driven and supported with the right type of data, increasing the number of meetings with departments, obtaining feedback from departments and offices, and incorporating that into the budget process. So those are just some of the core values driving, facilitating this process. The budget creation stages, this is what would typically happen in 2018. But we are now in early 2018 at a stage where the council provides the guidance for the county manager. The county manager sets the assumptions and the process for developing his recommended budget to the council. Between January and August, we actually do all the technical work of putting together the baseline budget, and at that time, departments and offices prepare their submissions for both their baseline budgets as well as their new requests, and they meet with the county manager to discuss all those requests. And then the county manager throughout this time regularly updates the council. It could be work sessions, it could be one-on-ones, it could be retreats if you choose to. And that's one of the important pieces of feedback as well, is how much you'd like to be involved in the process, what's your type of involvement that's preferred, preferred communication, type of data you would like to see. And then in the fall, the county manager finalizes the recommended budget and presents it to the council. And ultimately, in December, the council reviews that proposal, amends it, and approves the final budget. But truly, it's a very collaborative process, to where by the time the county manager actually finalizes the recommended budget for presenting it to the council, he's already incorporated a lot of the feedback, and it's been a back and forth process of communication.
Adriana, when you go to from now till August, and the departments submit their budgets, mm-hmm. do they do that with the communication of the assumptions of saying it's a short budget, so they
right?
I mean, that conversation is kind of going on.
Exactly. There are meetings, direct meetings between the county manager and all the departments and offices where we go through all of their budgets and the new requests and the budget needs and make sure that we fully understand
you
them and
that.
Support them with the right kind of data.
Okay.
So. And then once the two-year budget is adopted, it can be amended subsequently through what is known as supplementals, budget supplementals. The only one that's really required is the mid-biennium one, that's the readopt that the law requires for a two-year budget. But typically there are three more supplementals that are scheduled throughout the biennium, one in the spring of each year, and there's a final one, which is like a final cleanup one, at the end of the second biennium year. And the purpose of the supplementals, other than the readopt, is really to recognize any critical new needs, emergencies, contractual obligations that have been negotiated since the budget adoption, recognizing any new or additional revenue from grants and associated expenditures. So really the opportunity to address new needs is to adopt the budget and to readopt it, whereas the other budget amendments are more technical in nature and for really critical items. The budgeting approach that Clark County has been using is called baseline or incremental budgeting. That's the standard approach. It's really widely used by governments because it is the simplest to implement. And what it relies on is carrying forward existing appropriations and adding incremental changes through new requests, which we refer to as decision packages. And I believe that's a language we borrowed from the state of Washington. So new requests are known as decision packages. The downside of baseline budgeting is that it does not provide systematic tools for decision makers to evaluate changing priorities and look at service levels for all of the budget. What really happens with baseline budgeting is the majority of the budget gets carried forward in existing appropriations, and the majority of the discussion at budget time is focused on new requests. So the majority of the budget is not being reassessed by carrying it forward. And then to address this, the county manager is transitioning to program budgeting per the council's direction. This transition is currently in process. Departments and offices already submitted program descriptions. We have about 500 programs countywide for ongoing operations that have been described by departments and offices. And at this point, the county manager designated a strategic leadership team committee that started to meet, which has basically all of the strategic leadership team members are on this committee because everyone wanted to be at the table as part of the budget discussion.
So most departments
and elected offices are represented. And they're providing input about what are some of the realistic expectations for deliverables in terms of the program budgeting effort. Program budgeting is really an iterative process. It takes years. It's a multi-step process. And there are many cultural and technical challenges in implementing it. So we want to make sure that the data that are being collected in this first round, which are very initial first estimates, are going to be used realistically to see how decisions can be made for the 1920 budget. And the proposal from the county manager at this point, it's a very initial proposal, is to really focus the discussion of program budgets on the general fund in this first iteration for general fund programs. The principles would be basically to look at the programs that receive any form of general fund support, where the general fund support is obviously the total expense for a program minus whatever the dedicated revenue that the program brings in that leaves the general fund contribution to that particular program. And then obviously there will be a deficit to address in the 1920 budget, and by the time of the March 27th work session, we will come back with the data about what the deficit looks like for the general fund for 1920. We first need your guidance regarding the assumptions to be used to build the budget, and then we can come back with that information. But once that amount of shortfall is known, then reductions, this happened last biennial cycle as well, departments and the offices would propose reductions to their general fund subsidy contribution. Based on what they see as the lowest priority within their programs. And then those reductions proposals would be submitted in a program budget format with a focus on what are the mandates that are being fulfilled by each of the program, what are the service levels that are mandated or provided, and then, of course, an encouragement to always identify efficiencies from workforce planning, any process streamlining, and revenue recovery of existing revenues.
So just to maybe have questions or discussion, the program budgeting, as we dug into it, I think that when we get it done, we'll have like 500
programs.
So it's dividing up the organization in terms of a lot of information with a lot of work involved in that. And this could be really good information about everything the county does. And we're doing that now. And in doing this budget deliberation, sorting out, we're just not there yet. And so we're going to focus on the general fund and then focus on possible reductions and what the impact that is in a program management. So we're kind of halfway implementing the program budgeting as opposed to just saying we're just not ready, we're going to have to wait until the next round, we're going to try to salvage something out of it. So that's the road we're going down.
One thing, when the county used to have a published budget, even though it was pretty expensive, and we usually got it until about the end when we started a new budget, I think. But at least it was done by program, so you kept that kind of kept that budget, and you kind of had a framework of that, you know. When we have our budget, we have a lot of lines, so now that we're back into programs, and I'm kind of pushing, so when the state does their budget, you can pretty well tell their budget bill, it's extremely easy to go to program by program within that bill. And I hope eventually, or this time, that it will be much more clear to us that we can go, this is the program and this is under the program. And so we just don't see a bunch of lines, you know.
Exactly, and that's the main, thank you for mentioning that. That's the main benefit of switching to program budgeting as a best practice, because it gives a tool to have a conversation other than about line items or the size of department budgets or the number of FTEs. It gives an opportunity to have a conversation about services provided and the importance of those services from a policy priorities perspective. It's really not ideally meant to be implemented as a with the main purpose of budget cuts or finding balancing the budget, but it's a transparency effort in communicating to citizens what the priorities are for the council and how they allocate budget based on those priorities. and what the results are for the community, because ultimately these programs will have success measures and results linked to them down the road, which is an ulterior step. Right now we're at the stage where we're collecting basic program attributes, like what services are we providing, how much does it cost, are they mandated, what option of providing the service do we have through county staff or through a contract. So they're kind of the baby steps of implementing that first effort.
I'm curious if you think that you may find some duplication throughout the county as well with some of the programs that are doing either similar, very similar, or maybe the same work. And I do think that outcomes are really important to measure so that, the taxpayer knows what they're paying for and basically can either appreciate it or say, is this a priority?
Exactly, and that's another benefit, thank you for mentioning that, of doing the program budgeting. It fosters a conversation, a comprehensive conversation about services that are related to each other, not only among departments and offices, but also with the community. Who else in the community is providing the service? Could we regionalize some of the services? It serves as a basis for conversation for regionalization of services and finding efficiencies in that aspect. So thank you for mentioning that.
When you say we have, 500 programs?
That's a ballpark.
Ballpark.
Countywide, funds. Probably about half our general fund.
Okay. So do we have a list of them programs, Kenna?
We do.
Could we get that list to kind of start our homework?
We can. At this point, we don't have the costs and the revenues.
No, we don't need it.
All
we
need
is the list.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. We have an Excel spreadsheet where we keep updating it.
At least just starting on the terms.
Absolutely.
Things, words.
Does this spreadsheet say where the program's located? In which department it's located?
Yes, okay. It will say which
that
department.
Would help.
Not
okay.
all of them will be general fund, some will
yes.
be non-general
right.
fund. That's
yeah.
the next step, which is cost allocating all revenues and expenses, associating all revenues, all expenses, all FTEs with a specific program.
Do you know at this point what is general fund as opposed to the other, just generally?
Yes, generally, informally.
And have you delineated that on that? Yet or no?
No, it's more of a contextual knowledge.
Yeah.
We really have to wait for submissions back. Departments and offices are now working on their baseline budgets. They're submitting their revenues by early March, and then the expenditures and the FTEs.
I think generally, for the most part, we could probably indicate.
Is it general funded or?
Yeah, there might be.
Yeah. It would be helpful to know because.
That's where the problem is.
Yeah, that's where what we need to concentrate on.
We can do that. We can do that with some input from the departments and offices. So
okay.
we're not
right.
passing judgment in the budget office.
Yes.
So we'll
right.
get that list to you, and then we'll add that information.
Okay.
We'll
thank
work
you.
That
thank
information.
You.
Well, and not to talk about scary things, but just with the anticipation of a shortfall in the budget, that the traditional approach for reduction of budgets is percentages.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's across the board. Sometimes it's by groups of services. Generally, it's more by groups of services or departments. That will, at least at this point, we're thinking that will be the approach, the traditional way. But then as departments are requested to bring forth the impact of that reduction, it would be described by program.
Okay.
And that's exactly what this slide here does, that you just said.
Oh, right, yeah.
It does
okay.
it graphically.
That was,
it talks about...
Good slide.
Good segue.
It talks about linking the impact of any proposed reductions or even new requests to the programs in terms of service levels, results, so they would all be communicated in program budget language. So
very good.
So that was kind of the overall presentation on the very broad process for creating the 1920 budget. The next section I'd like to talk about is general fund challenges that are expected for 1920. One of the first challenges is the general fund minimum reserve that we've been talking about, the $23 million minimum reserve. That is a calculated number that depends on our total expenditure and cash flow needs. And that calculation has increased to $24.3 million for the minimum reserve that should be available in the general fund. And of course, more than a minimum is desirable during peak economic times to create safeguards for the next downturn, for the next recession. The more available fund balance, the more it helps should a turnaround occur.
How many days is that?
I think 24.3 is probably a little less than 2 months.
Okay.
Just probably 50-some days, somewhere between 50 and 60 days. GFOA best practice is around 60 days, so we're a little below that. reserves are projected below the minimum requirement by the end of 2018, and I'll show a slide next. And that follows the payment of the legal settlement that occurred in December of $5.25 million. So the downside is that fund balance will likely not be available to address one-time items in 1920. Anytime we've had fund balance, the county has had general fund balance above the minimum requirement, it has helped address one-time items in the budget. Right now, for 17-18, the projection for the ending fund balance is at $22.7 million, so below the new $24.3 desirable minimum per county policy. The beginning fund balance is 29.4 as of January of 17. The revenue forecast will be updated in the spring of 2018. There will be a budget request which adds to the sales tax forecast approximately $2 million, about 2.7% more, but also reduces revenues for the Sheriff's Office Jail Work Center by $700,000 per year. So the net impact will be a new revenue forecast estimate of $321.9 million after those updates are made. The expense budget, $323.3, adding the legal settlement that has to be recognized in the general fund, and then the projected ending fund balance is $22.7 million. Of course, there are still, it's just a projection, and there are still many moving pieces in 2018. There are still two supplementals, the spring supplemental and the final supplemental, and there will be some needs that have to be recognized that are critical, which will add to the expense. At the same time, there might be some savings, department or office savings of about $2.4 million, but those could be offset by what happens in the supplementals in the spring and in the fall, depending on what the council approves. And then there might be some additional revenue losses where we may have to recognize lower revenues for jail reimbursement for the sheriff's office. So we're still waiting on data.
The expense budget, is that projected spending for this?
That is the current expense budget before
spring
and final supplementals. The only thing it does not include in the footnote there is workday funding of $4.2 million, which is coming out of money set aside outside of fund balance. It was dedicated reserve fund balance especially for that project.
So this is December 31 of this next year, you're projecting the 22.7.
Correct. By the end of this year, it would be 22.7. Again, still many moving pieces and
but best guess at this point.
Best guess at this point will be very close to.
Which is a million or two short.
Short.
Where we need to be.
I'd say broadly, we'll be very close to the minimum.
Where is in the past year or two, we've had more than that and have used that to balance the budget.
Correct. Yes. So that'll be a challenge for balancing the 1920 budget.
And that's the danger of using fund balance to balance the budget. It's there for one time.
Correct.
And the next year, it's gone.
So the 321.9 includes the additional sales tax revenue you're anticipating.
Correct.
And already
the Sheriff's Office reduction in jail work center revenue, which is a little less than $700,000. It's the state contract that we no longer get that revenue.
Have we closed out the 17-18 budget, so seeing what we projected for revenues and expenses and how that actually, it's like last year somewhere around this time we had like a similar meeting.
So you mean we've closed 2017. 2017 has closed and we've taken a look at revenues and updated the forecast based on the trends, on the latest numbers. Is that what you mean?
No, do we have like our actuals as opposed to our budgeted? for last year for
2017?
Yes, we do. I can provide. I don't have that in front of me, but I can provide.
But it's okay, reflected but that, in the 2017.
It's reflected in here.
Correct. That's about half of that is 2017 revenues. Okay. And we've updated the forecast looking at what happened in 17, mm-hmm. so we're projecting 18 basically, and adding the two together. Actuals for 17 plus the projection for 18 yield the total revenue forecast updated.
And the key one, sales tax, Adriana, is a slide
right.
that shows the trend there.
In the long run, notwithstanding some surprise disbursements that we have to make, how close are we in our estimation to actual over a long period of time? What
I can go back and
just
or usually
in
within
general,
1%.
Usually within about
1%.
Okay, that's.
And just generally speaking, correct me, mm-hmm. as you know, I think for property tax, it's a fairly accurate projection because it's mm-hmm. fixed. Mm-hmm. Sales tax, we're generally conservative,
yes.
so we exceed that. Other revenues, charges and fees, we've fallen below because of a variety of factors.
I was thinking about the general fund overall, we're within 1%. We also update it very frequently at every opportunity so that we can recognize any additional revenue above the forecast. Sales tax is very volatile. It's the hardest to predict. Property tax is very stable. And I actually have a slide on that too.
In the big picture, what percent of our revenue is other?
Actually, we're getting right there. There's
all
a
right.
slide right on that.
That's
so we're
question.
Almost there.
Hey, Brenda, before yes. we go, it might help us, and I'm going back to the bad times we went through when we had the monthly updates of our financial. One of them, I mean, as a wider view, might be good when we talk about the long term. And actually, we talked a lot about why
right.
the forecast is, and it really helps housing and everything else. So.
And I do have a section on economic assumptions and the context overall, which kind of links back to how
okay.
we used to do the regular updates.
Yeah.
So back to general fund challenges. Revenue losses, I've mentioned the jail work center revenues, $1.4 million per biennium, almost $700,000 per year. We've also reduced, when we released the revenue baseline for departments, we've reduced clerk's office revenues by about $500,000 for a two-year period and district court revenues by about $600,000. We're also pending more information on jail revenues from the state and the city. We're experiencing some billing delays, and there might be a permanent decline in revenue that needs to be recognized. So that's still an unknown, needs more information by the time we get the baseline submissions back from departments and offices. And then the other big challenge is the lack of REIT 1 revenue to support facilities project costs. There was about $10 million worth of REIT in the last few years, REIT 1, that really helped pay for facilities needs, which is part of the scope of REIT 1. But that fund balance is no longer available. There's currently REIT 2 available, as we discussed in a work session. But REIT 1 is no longer there available to support facilities project costs. So those are some of the major challenges.
What are the reasons for the court? The district court and the clerk's office being down?
Good question. The revenues have been trending down, particularly for clerk's office collections. They've been trending down over the last three or four biennia, probably by about $2 million per biennium. And I know some of that has to do with, is there anyone from the clerk's office here? Did you want to speak to it quickly or?
District court.
District court and clerk's office, yes. So we have someone from district court that can provide a quick overview, and then I can speak a little bit to the clerk's office.
From people who can't pay, would that be the clerk's office too?
Yes. Good morning. My name is Brad Alberts. I'm the district deputy court administrator for district courts. We have seen a reduction in revenue. There's a couple reasons. There's several reasons, actually. One big reason is the reduction in the number of cases. So as outside agencies reduce their staff, like Washington State Patrol or Vancouver, Vancouver Police Department, we also see infractions go down, which is our largest income producer. The other thing that has really hit district courts is there's a state ruling called State versus Blazina, which means that the court judges need to establish an ability to pay with each individual. So if they show that they do not have the ability to pay, that reduces the fine or eliminates the fine. So that has caused a reduction in revenue over the past 4 or 5 years.
But thinking about that, why would it reduce the revenue since before they couldn't pay? And now we're saying they don't have to pay because they can't pay. It doesn't make sense that we don't have revenue from people that we didn't get money from anyway.
It will increase the number of people who even have to be assessed. Okay, we turn them over to collection, we may still get some funding from those who may have been questionable. Now we can't even turn them over to collection or assess the fine.
So we have more cases and fewer people are able to pay their fees and assessments because of income problems.
We may have more people, more cases. It has started to go back up, but since 2014, case numbers have been going down. Now they're starting to level out. Looking at last year compared to the prior year, we're kind of leveling out. But because of the ability to pay assessment, that's where it gets a big part of the reduction.
Mm-hmm. And it is my understanding, thank you, Brett, that for the clerk's office, the ability to pay has also been, that change has also been one of the major things affecting their revenues as well.
Just a Brad, a question. What's the total revenue for the department, to put that $600,000 in context?
Well, total revenue between corrections, probation department, and district court, which we are together, is about $18, $19
million. Okay. That's good.
Thank you very much. I knew you would better, you would say much better than I would when you would explain it. So, into the economic context assumptions, building the budget for 1920 requires making some assumptions about what the overall context is going to be that's going to drive the major revenues. The probability of recession is relatively low for the next few years, and that statement relies on economic forecasts from reputable institutions. Federal tax policy changes are expected to stimulate growth. Of course, downside risk exists. Recessions are close to impossible to predict. We know that they'll happen. We just don't know when. Sensitive trends in the economy, shifts in federal monetary policy, spending cuts because of budget deficits, geopolitical tensions, weak global growth, all of those things can affect the economy at home. Therefore, overall, the county manager recommends using a cautiously optimistic approach to economic environment. So this budget forecast does not call for a recession, but it also does not call for continued accelerated growth. On the revenue side, proposed assumptions for major tax revenues. Property tax is a very stable revenue. It grows from new construction, and the forecast assumes that new construction continues at the current levels of activity, and a 1% levy growth for property taxes is not included in baseline. We can definitely show the impact of it separately, but it is not recommended to be included in baseline. It's subject to future council decision. The road fund diversion is continued at the baseline level of $4.5 million per year, and that can be an item of discussion. It's just carried forward.
Adriana, the last couple of years, new construction, what has that added?
So the new construction has added about 2% to the general fund. It grows every year. Well, it's not added 2%, but it's grown 1 to 2%. New construction is about $1 million. In good economic times, it brings in about $1 million per year to the general fund. So property tax will grow about 1 to 2% from new construction, plus whether or not the council approves a 1% levy increase. So 2 to 3% potentially, maximum. The sales tax revenue in the general fund is volatile. Revenue growth is estimated at 4.2% annual increase, which represents the 10-year historical average. If you actually look at the last 25 years, overall it was 4.2%. If you look at the last 10 years with the recession and the growth, it was 4.2%. So that's kind of a long-term trend with obviously ups and downs. It has been higher lately. It is slowing down from the double digits to 8 to 9%. A cautionary longer-term approach is a historical trend of 4.2%. And we do update sales tax revenues with every budget supplemental. We recognize that additional revenue, so we update it frequently. And then,
in one way to look at that sales tax, a portion of that 4.2 is inflation, which what is inflation running annually now?
Inflation historically is close to 3%. So when you look at the total,
so it's we're looking at a modest, like a 1% net increase in sales.
Sales tax is really driven a lot by population and inflation together. The growth in the number of people that are purchasing items as well as the inflationary cost of those items. Unless income changes significantly in the county, that would drive a significant change in sales tax, higher income, because then higher spending would derive from that.
As we shrink our retail outlets, thanks to annexation, does that change the percentages?
Yes, and I will show the impact of annexations on the last major annexation on the next few slides in the chart. The third major revenue, real estate excise tax, that's our most volatile major tax revenue. The revenue is assumed to stay steady through 2021 with no further growth. We've actually seen some declines in recent few months. There was a decision package that fully explains this assumption in the readopt when we updated the forecast. It has to do with the housing market, and we've consulted with the Economic and Revenue Forecast Council, so I won't go into a lot of detail, but this keeps the real estate excise tax revenue at the same level as right now through 2021 and assumes growth after that.
So I'll just, councilors have crystal balls on that.
Lack of supply. Yeah.
That is one of the major, the lack of supply. Right now the market is mostly driven by the change in prices. The income is driven by the change in prices, and that might also slow down with the increasing mortgage rates. So a lot of moving factors. This is the slide I was referring to, Councillor Stewart, that showed the general fund revenue components. 38% property tax, and I mentioned that grows at 1.2% per year from new construction. And then sales tax is right now about a quarter of the general fund, 25%, grows about 4% per year. However, it is leakage to the 40% loss to our bordering state of Oregon and annexation losses when the cities annex areas that are highly productive of retail sales. And then 37% all other revenues. And I'm going to show some historical trend for each of these categories.
So on the sales tax and the prospect of the city renewing interest in additional annexations, what assumptions do we make about that, and how close is our communication with them? It doesn't seem that communication is very close right now with the city about what their intent is, but it makes it difficult for us to anticipate this.
Correct. The city has been for a long time inactive regarding annexations.
Right.
They've recently picked up that activity again, and there's an impact on our 2018 revenues that I'll show shortly. This forecast assumes no major annexation activity for the next few years. Again, that can change. We haven't heard anything from the city or communicated anything about another major annexation being planned at this point. So, and then speaking of the sales tax history, this shows the annual general fund income from sales tax each year. And you can see in 2018 how revenue is almost flat because the annexation impact part, the estimated impact is about $1.2 million per year ongoing revenue loss for the general fund from the annexed area. And that shows 2019 and 20. The numbers are really very rounded up to the closest million, but that shows the 4.2% assumed increase in revenue for 2019-20. for sales tax. And you can look back to see how volatile this revenue is. The drop from 2008 to 2009 was $6 million in 1 year during the recession. And then some of the increases that we've had that are highlighted in red, they were really accounting changes. I know I've mentioned this before when the state auditor said that we should recognize the revenues when they're actually earned rather than when they're received, and there's a two-month delay. So that happened twice for different types of sales taxes. So that additional revenue is really just due to recognizing on the books one time 14 months of revenue instead of 12. It would really distort the trend if we show that as actual growth in the sales tax revenue. So that's kind of an accounting adjustment there. So that's the revenue forecast, history and forecast for sales tax. The next chart shows all revenues to where the property taxes are at the bottom. And that includes all of the growth in property taxes, whether it just came from new construction or there was a 1% levy increase. So you can see that that revenue growth is about $1 to $2 million per year generally combined between new construction and the 1%. And so the assumption here for 1920, this bottom two bars here, is just a growth that comes from new construction. The 1% is not included in this forecast. Sales tax, it's what we've seen in the previous chart, just that forecasting here for 1920. And then all other revenues are this kind of mustard color, brown color charts. And you can see how this is a very challenging area for the county. Back in 2010, 11, 12, those revenues were about 65 to 66 million per year. We're now projecting $61, $62 million per year. Some of the revenue losses in this area, I've already covered some of those challenges. Another big important one is really investment interest. Back in these days, the general fund earned a couple of million dollars per year from investment earnings that we no longer get due to the low mortgage rates, the low interest rates environment. So this area is really, the all other revenues area is one of the major challenges for the county, where what really happens is the growth we're seeing from property tax and sales tax is offset by revenue losses in this other area, leading to a general growth in revenue overall for the general fund of only 1% to 2% historically. Going into the expense assumptions, one important thing to talk about is our budget controls. How is the budget controlled? Budget controls historically have been set at the department or office level, and that's up to the council to decide. This is specified in our budget resolution at the county. And that's for the general fund at the department or office level. And for all other funds, it's really at the fund level, for funds outside the general fund. One important thing to talk about is how Clark County treats payroll, FTE-related expenses, what's referred to in the budget resolution as regular payroll and benefits. The budget office manages the budget for payroll and benefits. So if there are vacancy savings, departments or offices do not manage those. They don't automatically get to reuse them for other purposes. This usually generates in the general fund about 1% to 2% savings in a biennium, which really helps during budget supplemental address needs that come up that do not have other funding sources set aside. So in that sense, departments and offices have full budget control of their appropriation for the non-FTE portion of their budget. But the FTE portion is managed by the budget office on behalf of the council. And what happens is the county manager can actually sign off on moving what's called contingency, and I will talk about that in a meeting in a second, to departments and offices as needed for their payroll costs. And I'll talk about contingency in a second. The baseline budget approach, what the baseline budget approach does, it removes any one-times from the budget. So when the 1920 budget is calculated, any one-times the council approved for 1718 will be removed from the department or office budget. And any ongoing costs that have been approved by the council throughout the biennium will be added to the department or office budget for the next budget cycle.
For example?
For example, if there was a one-time, let's say there was one-time for overtime, $200,000, when creating the next budget cycle, that would be taken out. But if it was ongoing, it would be carried forward, and the department or office would receive that $200,000 on an ongoing basis as part of their appropriation. If there was a grant that was a one-time, all the revenue and expense associated with the grant would be taken out of creating the new budget cycle. So if there was a project, a large project, one-time large projects like Workday, for example, that's just a one-time, it'll no longer be included in the appropriation for the next budget cycle.
Or if something was approved mid-year to continue forever, the full impact of that is included.
Yeah.
The entire
amount.
Whatever piece of the previous.
What do they call that? The bow wave effect?
Yeah.
Is that, did I get that? Mm-hmm. Is that a good... You're the legislative expert. Legislative term.
The bow wave can sometimes be a beginning of an implementation, and then you have significant project costs. Oftentimes you see it with construction, a design, and the building and construction is more expensive.
And that's like an important comment. Because, for example, in the spring supplemental of 2018, an item could be approved as ongoing, but it may be just 6 or 7 months. So when we create the next 2-year budget, that becomes 24 months. So something that might seem like a lesser cost because it's a partial year cost, we're going to carry that forward, making it ongoing. So that's why we always ask in the fiscal impact for the next budget cycle impact so that we can show that. Known obligations that will be built as part of the budget for 1920 include any FTE-related cost increases that the council already approved. At this point, the majority of our bargaining agreements have not been approved yet, so only costs that have cost increases the council already approved will be carried forward. Or if there is a mandated contractual obligation cost increase in FTEs, we carry that forward. The big one is, of course, state retirement PERS rates. They have been going up significantly since the recession. The state gave local governments a break on that, and the rates have been going up. We have to build the cost of the employer contributions to state retirement. That's kind of outside council immediate
control.
Do you know what that looks like? Do you know what that looks like for the next biennium?
Yes, we do. The number, I believe it's a blended, there's multiple plans. The blended rate is about 12.7%.
Increase?
The increase has gone, it used to be 10 years ago around, I think, 2 or 3%. It's been increasing. It was about 11.some%. So it's been going up gradually.
We
can get the specifics, the history of the PERS rates. So the other thing that happens in baseline, there are three charges that we call calculated charges that the budget office updates in baseline using information from relevant departments. One category is fleet costs. So Public Works calculates the cost of replacing and maintaining the fleet based on a schedule of approved vehicles, the cost of maintaining and replacing existing approved vehicles. Technology replacement and repair costs are also based on approved existing equipment replacement and maintenance schedules. And then the auditor's office calculates what's called indirect costs, all funds outside the general fund that benefit from internal services like budget, human resources, pay a contribution to the general fund, and that creates the indirect costs that are updated based on the auditor's office calculation. And there's a 2-year delay. So 2018 costs would be based on the 2016 actual expenditure. That's the county's methodology for using that.
So back to the fleet costs, are we using some of the figures that came from that fleet study? And I know a group has been working on how we could implement the using what that fleet study showed we needed. Is that put into
none of those changes have happened yet. Those changes are subject to a recommendation to the county manager and to the council. This is based on the existing equipment replacement and maintenance without any changes from the study. I think there was a small, there was a recommendation, and Lori, maybe you can speak to the one recommendation that was incorporated in how methodology is used in order to calculate, was it admin overhead or there was some change in methodology that was incorporated? Thank you for clarifying that. So that was the one change that could be timely incorporated. That was a recommendation that came from the FEED study. All the other recommendations would need the analysis and going through the process of approval to make changes to the technology.
Seems like that might need some analysis because it's not going to be the same.
It's not. We're not going to save money on that item.
Yeah, no, we are not going to save money on that.
It'll be more upfront costs, right. but longer-term savings. Yeah. Continuing on to how the budget is built and the proposed expense assumptions, when FTE costs are calculated, the budget office uses the cost of filled positions. So if an individual is in a position, we use the information about the individual, their medical plan, their current step, all the information that's specific to that one individual. And then for vacant positions, we use, and this being the historical approach, step one, assuming step one for non-management positions and middle step for management positions, the reality is that most positions are not hired at step one. They're hired at a higher step. But this helps not create a budget that would be inflated because we know there's going to be some vacancy savings, so it's a more fiscally conservative approach. And then for a vacant position, using single rates for the medical plans, which are a little lower than a family plan. So that kind of helps tighten the budget a little bit. And employee wages increase by one step per year if they're eligible, according to the current pay plan. And the COLA, cost of living increase, is only built into the FTE cost if the council has already approved one. If it has not been approved, it is not assumed. And now I get to the contingency assumptions. What goes into contingency? So costs that may increase, but the increase is not known at the time of budgeting, are placed in contingency reserves. There are FTE-related cost increases. All the salary and benefit increases that have not yet been bargained or approved, the council authorizes those parameters for wage assumptions, and then HR informs the budget office. And we set that aside into contingency and show it separately. So that's subject to further approval. And you'll see that every time with the budget, you'll see it separately. It will not be built into existing FTE costs. And then any medical and dental employer contributions as well, which are subject to bargaining, how much the county contributes to those plans, also goes into contingency based on assumptions that are blessed by the council and communicated by HR to the budget office. And also another category that has gone traditionally into a contingency budget is any significant expected contractual increases. So the sheriff's office recommends setting aside $1.25 million for 1920 for medical and dental jail projected contract increases. The current budget for 17-18 includes $500,000 for this purpose. Now, these dollars would only be moved from contingency to the sheriff's office upon that projection coming true and that budget being needed. So it's not an automatic allotment, and it cannot be used for other purposes.
So are they actually anticipating that that contract is going to double?
I think the increase rate is more like 5% therein. This is just the additional needed.
Yeah, the contract is about $3 million a year, and so a two-year budget means that when you look from binding to binding, the increase is really...
So $3 million a year, so $6 million biennium.
Six to seven.
Yeah. And you throw in $1 million and change.
And medical increases going up still close to 10% a year.
Now, one more thing important about contingency. Contingency also includes the budget for accrued vacation and sick leave payouts. And let me just explain what that means. When employees leave the county, whether they're retiring or taking another position, They have an accrued amount of vacation and sick leave that is paid out to them according to our current policy. For the general fund, the cost is right now close to $2 million per biennium, and that occurs every biennium. But we don't know in which department or office these expenses are going to come through. We don't know which employees are going to leave. So this is set in contingency, and then the county manager can sign off when that occurs on moving that budget to the department or office that needs to make those payments. So I hope that makes sense why that is set into contingency. So I think that concludes the assumptions part of the presentation. So we wanted to leave, yes?
No.
No? We wanted to leave room here for questions, clarification, receiving any council guidance regarding the process, assumptions, and policy priorities for the county manager. And then what our next steps would be, knowing what the assumptions would be for revenues and expenses, then the budget office would complete calculations based on those assumptions and come back to the council in a March 27 work session to actually talk about the numbers yielded by those assumptions, focusing on the general fund, which is obviously the most important one, and then discussing a strategy for how to develop a balanced budget. And an important part of the conversation is discussing an opportunity for how elected officials can present their budget needs to the council. That has been done in different ways in the past. It could be work sessions where they get separate time. It could be retreats with the council.
So before we get to that, why don't we go back to the revenue assumptions? We've had, there's a little discussion. Maybe we'll go back just to kind of review those again and get your opinions.
I think that we talked about, you know, a work session about really getting a good grasp on revenue assumptions our next work session, because to build the budget for us to tell the, you know, average citizen out there when they say, oh, you know, the world's doing good, you know, there's no problem, and we say no, the budget shortfall, then we have to have that message to start out to build everything else.
So the you know, property tax, sales tax, real estate excise, our assumptions, are these reasonable, or do you have opinions about these?
It's real life, yeah.
Well, this the sales tax volatile, I was trying to get, kind of getting Lindsay's eye about a bill that's in the legislature right now that would... take away the opportunity for Washington retailers to no longer exempt Oregon from paying sales tax. And at first when she told me about it, I thought, no, I don't want to do that to retailers. Then I got to thinking, how many people come over here from Oregon and actually buy? And besides, they're already collecting sales tax from Washingtonians. So if that has a chance, you said it's in the budget.
So what the bill would do is, and it's an omnibus tax bill, and all of this is incorporated within the state budget negotiations. All of those are done behind closed doors, and it comes out very much at the last minute, and then everybody scrambles to figure out what's in it. So what the proposal is that's public and on the table, is that there would be no sales tax exemption at the time of sale. If you had paid more than $25 in sales tax, which is roughly a $300 purchase, you could apply to the State Department of Revenue for a remittance. But you would have to send a copy of your residency, so like an Oregon driver's license. You'd have to be from a non-sales tax state and send a copy of proof of residency and a copy of your receipt, and then you would receive essentially a refund from the State Department of Revenue. But we won't know if that's going to be in the budget or in what form. Of course, it's been debated in the past, and it's a state supplemental budget year, so they're usually disinclined to make significant changes, but it could happen.
Okay.
Do we know how much sales tax dollars we exempt in Clark County? Do we have statistics on that?
I don't. We probably could get that information.
I think it's required to be reported, so it should be available to the state.
It also doesn't seem very stable, since somebody can ask for go to the Department of Revenue. When would the Department of Revenue determine that Clark County gets the sales tax that's been paid on items, and how long did that, you know, that sounds kind of
in a particular period.
Yeah,
of time.
And I mean, that must
not
be
contemplated within the legislation.
I recommend that if action was taken, then assumptions should be adjusted. But
not much.
Not much.
Right. I just thought it's a.
It's
always going to be kind of volatile. I have the same. Actually, I have the same concern as Chair Bolt about the fact that the economy is doing really well, and to say that our budget is missing funds, we actually need some very clear data on what we can show people, because it doesn't make sense otherwise.
One of my goals for the March 27th work session is to come back with that revenue story and show the revenues, what's in the category, all other revenues at a more detailed level. Mm-hmm. Because I think on the property tax and sales tax, the history tells the story with the annexation losses.
Oh, yes.
Right. That tells, and then the new construction versus the one, it's limited really constitutionally, the growth. But then in the all other revenues is where the most change occurred along the years, which is challenging. So we'll put some history together to talk about the major areas and tell the story.
Yeah. In addition to that, the expense side as well. So those expense areas that we cannot control, the PERS and sometimes the healthcare costs and things like that that are outside of our direct control. The number of union contracts that we negotiate and the interest bargaining, those kinds of things that put us in a difficult situation in terms of expenses.
How much work would it be to put together some scenarios on the sales tax and the new construction levels in terms of here's what that revenue looks like at current levels, here's what it looks like with some growth? So I think we will see some growth in those, maybe better than the 4.2%. Then here's kind of a bad case, current levels, growth in the next couple of weeks. We look at that, see, you know, how much money
I can provide that information to you, but even by email as a follow up to this work session, I can tell you for every 1% additional we assume in sales tax growth, what the number yields in the general fund.
And some of the on sales tax, some of the historical, like the last 5 years, I know that 4.2 average, you know, that means that's, you know, 2009 through.
Right there.
Yeah.
Well, we went from, it was growing there for a while at like up to 11%, 13%.
Right.
But of course, the bigger the number gets, the smaller the percentage increases.
This year, 2017, has been about a 9% increase. And then 18 is almost flat because we're assuming 4.2%. And then it's almost flat because of the annexation loss. So,
how much, maybe you can get this. Comparable county, Spokane. I'd be interested in how much sales tax Spokane brings in.
So, Councilor Bolt, I actually did some research on that last year. So, Clark County, when I did it last year, per capita brought in about $11,800 per person, and Spokane brought in over $15,000 per person. In sales
that's
tax revenue.
A third more.
So that's what we use.
Only eight counties collected less tax revenue per capita than we do, and none of them had a population of over 80,000 people.
And I'm kind of wondering, you know, now that, you know, I looked at my property tax statement today, which is, this is really a bad day now.
Yeah.
But
I had my bad day yesterday.
But now that people are interested, will be very interested in property tax statement, I think that we have a avenue of saying, shop in Clark County. You know, at least we make the case.
Oh,
may
yeah,
not
well,
work, but.
So you can pay more taxes since you just got your property tax bill.
Well, do you want
more.
Your property tax to go up more? But,
no.
Well,
that's how we actually infer the 40% sales tax leakage to Oregon. We look at the five other urban comparable counties and what the per capita sales tax revenue is, like taxable retail sales, and that's where it's about 40% lower in Clark County versus what one would expect.
So what, you know, like we've harped on this. The one thing would be nice, and probably would be with Lindsay, is that if you go to Costco and buy something, the average citizen, even if you know how to pay a use tax, it is terrible to do. So, may not happen. I don't know. But there may be one citizen out there that says, hey, I want to pay my use tax. But it's impossible to figure out how to do it.
And there's no form online to
We will get you better information on the other category.
Okay.
I think that'll be very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Know about that. There could even be some, my guess is that it's generally not related to workload, but there could be some areas where with revenues down, there could be a correlation with workload or service levels that are reduced.
Right. Okay.
So that's the revenue assumptions. Expenditure is just how we build it. I think those are pretty straightforward, unless there's something you want to take out or put in. Numbers on a sheet of paper, just how we build the numbers.
Well, I think just making sure there's a delineation between those non-controllable costs and those that are controllable, I think is the...
There is, and budget, we're presenting them separately, and then budget controls are set separately for those areas, including in our financial system and how they're managed.
Okay.
Any discussion of like the communication process and in terms of the elected official involvement?
But a reminder of a conversation we had in the retreat was about hearing from departments, from elected officials, and input that I recall was county manager get that input, put together a proposal, and then present it to the council for consideration.
Okay.
That was a discussion. I don't know if you have any different thoughts on that in terms of process and hearing from folks.
Another factor I'd be interested in, this is a variable that we can't necessarily count or incorporate now, but something we may want to be mindful about. Does the county have any variable rate loans outstanding that we pay a certain amount over prime? My interest there is obvious that there right now seems to be some pressure on interest rates, and that can be a huge expense. So I don't think we can anticipate or necessarily budget for that, but I think we better have a backup plan.
The treasurer's office is constantly working on those opportunities, and some of them have come recently in front of the council in terms of refinancing anything eligible, so they're constantly working on
it. And although I know that, it's up to us to figure it out in the end. So
yes.
If we could be kept up to speed
that's
on
that.
That's
a good idea.
Thank you.
Okay. That's good.
I believe that's all the information.
Okay.
27th of March. We'll
Very
get
good.
It again.
Okay.
Thank you, Andrea.
Thank you.
And Jim, before we close, was it announced, published that
it was on
executive
the
session? So we'll have an executive session at 11:30.
11:30.
Okay. Thank you.
See you. 15, 16.
Tax bill.